Welcome to the weekend edition of the Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. On today's program, we got a lot to cover, as always, and looking forward to introducing you to today's guests. But in addition to that, I do want to mention that the Price of Business, which is one of the longest-running business shows in the country, continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com. We are adding new content all the time. There you can see all of our regular guests. We have reoccurring guests from Fox Business, from Yahoo Finance, gentlemen like Cody Willard, who was a longtime CNBC and Fox Business anchor. He's on this program every single week. And so we're excited by the talent that we bring you. Also, I do want to mention I've got a book called Making New Rich Books Work for You, and exclusively for our listeners of this program. It's available at a ridiculously low price. If you want to get more information about that, go to priceofbusiness.com. If you read anything by people like Tim Ferriss or Robert Kiyosaki, who's been on my show many, many times, and you know, really were excited but had little to show for it when you try to pursue those things, my book explains why. There's something going on, and the problem really isn't with these authors. It's usually with the reader. And you can get more information about that at priceofbusiness.com. With that, here's our first guest right here on The Price of Business. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. Linda Scroggins is back. She is one of my favorites. She knows that. And she reminds me of that sometimes, don't you, Linda? I just enjoy it. We have such a good time every time you're on. First of all, you've got incredible energy, great experience, and a wonderful field of expertise that I think people are encouraged by every time you and I chat. You know, I deal a lot in business and political and national news, and you talk a lot of, you know, doom and gloom. I almost hear that Star Wars music as I enter into a segment, you know, the dum dum da dum da, and you're just a reprieve from all of that pressure. And so I get a break from it. Listeners have said that when you and I chat that they get a reprieve from reality. And let's face it, this is way better and way safer than drugs, this kind of reprieve. And so, Linda, always love having you on the program. Take a moment to tell us about your firm. But before you do that, I should mention, this is the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. Make sure you get more information about us at priceofbusiness.com. But a little bit about your firm, your best website, and then you go right ahead and jump into our topic today, and welcome.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me. I'm Linda Scroggins, founder of Affluent Luxury Travel, and we specialize in creating experiences that are truly one of a kind, whether it's a tailor-made vacation or VIP access to the biggest sports and entertainment events. We're based right at the Dallas Cowboys World Headquarters at the Star in Frisco, Texas, and we love helping our clients turn every trip into an unforgettable adventure. We like to say, if you can dream it, we can do it. Our website is www.affluentluxurytravel.net.
I love it. I love it. Let's get into our topic today. Go right ahead and set the stage for us.
Okay, Kevin. So today, first of all, thank you for having me. But today I want to take you on a little journey of a place I recently visited. So there's no passport required. So we're heading to the most vibrant, colorful, and absolutely unforgettable place in the world. And this is Marrakesh, Morocco. Now, Morocco isn't just a city. It's truly an experience. You know, it's the kind of place that stays with you long after you left, and that's really how I feel right now. I mean, the colors, the sounds, the scents, the food, the people, you know, the experience. I think it's an experience that every traveler should seek. Now, I want to give you just a little bit of history. So I want to give you, like, a pulse of the Medina. While I was there, I visited the Medina, and it's like the old walled part of Marrakesh. And suddenly you feel like you're in another world. And I remember my hotel guide and concierge that was hosting me kept telling me, they said, Linda, you need to have a guide with you because the Medina is like a labyrinth. And if you don't know where you're going, you'll get lost. So I couldn't, you know, have that. But it was so incredibly amazing. That, I mean, the streets were narrow and winding, more like alleyways than roads. and the shops, they were all little these little boutique shops that were crammed together, and they kind of spill into the lanes, you know, the alleyways, and every turn offers something new. And, you know, I was on a shopping quest for traditional apparel, and I was just overwhelmed by all the options. You know, I saw these leather shoe workers hammering away at sandals, rug merchants unrolling the most colorful carpets you've ever seen, spice sellers with little mountains of cumin, paprika, and saffrons just piled high in front of them. And the air was just thick with aromas. It was sweet, spicy, and smoky. For me, it was intoxicating, wow. But it was in a good way. So, and then when you reach this area, it's called the Gemma Square, and I hope I'm saying that right. It's a city, to me, it felt like the city's heartbeat. And during the day, it was alive with snake charmers. Now, I was a little freaked out by the snake charmers. I had to look away because I don't like snakes. But it was just fascinating. And then there were also like henna artists and storytellers. And by evening, the whole place transforms. I mean, you have like food stalls pop up, smoke rises from grills, you know, people cooking, musicians playing drums and lute, and the energy just surged. I mean, you feel it in your bones. It was chaotic, yes, yeah. But it was also magical. And that's where I feel that Morocco really shows you its soul. I mean, it was just incredibly touching for me.
Yeah, very, very good. Hey, by the way, people, I encourage people to do two things. There's a great song by Crosby, Stills, and Nash called Marrakesh Express. Listen to the song, mm-hmm. One of my favorites. But more importantly, look at the Anthony Bourdain video that he did about Marrakesh and about the entire region, the country there. That is, he said, this is the most international city in the world. That's what he said in it. He said this mm-hmm. has every element of pieces from all over the planet in the most exotic and unique way. A man who traveled a lot said it's one of his favorite destinations.
Yeah, and Kevin, and just, you know, piggybacking off of that, you know, Anthony Bourdain segment, you know, yeah, you know, let's talk about the food there. I mean, the Marrakesh food, it's a food lover's dream. You've got tangines. So have you heard of tangines before, how they prepare tangines?
No, I have not.
So tangines, they prepare the food in clay pots. So there are dishes, there are clay pot dishes where they put in meat. I had mostly lamb. They can also do fish. And they do vegetables and spices, and they cook it slowly until everything is tender and just like bursting with flavor. I mean, the lamb with apricots and almonds, and then they have chicken preserved with lemons and olives. And so they bring this tangine clay pot out to your table, and they pour it out on the plate. And the aromas just sort of like unleash from this clay pot. I mean, I was just blown away. Of course, I don't eat very much, but I was really trying to get through this dish. And just the flavors was unlike anything that I had ever tasted before. I mean, it was just, the food is just, it's definitely a signature.
Yes. You know, every time you're on, I notice how hungry I am. So I think you must talk about food every time you talk about a location. And that makes sense, right? That is part of the adventure.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And, you know, the other part of it, too, you know, we talked about the shopping. And, you know, for travelers that are seeking, you know, that really loves shopping, I feel like Marrakesh is definitely a shopper's paradise. And it's really not just because of the souvenirs, but the souks, you know, they're traditional markets. I mean, they're like treasure hunts. If you're one of those type of people that likes to do these treasure hunts, then yes, that's definitely a place for you to experience it. But, you know, here's the thing. When you buy something, you're not just picking up an object. You're really supporting some of the local artisans whose families have been practicing these crafts for generations. And every piece has a story. And when you take it home, you really carry a piece of Marrakesh with you. And that's what I brought back with me. And I'm so happy that I still feel like I'm there because I'm able to look at these pieces that I've purchased, and it just brings back those memories of my time there.
Yeah, I love that. And what a beautiful way of putting that away. I love this. You know, you and I always play beat the clock from the very minute our segment begins. We don't have enough time. And so we're getting to that point already, shocking as that is. give us some final thoughts and some takeaways still as we wrap it up, and give that website one more time.
Okay. Well, I do want to just give a shout out to some of the most iconic hotels there, La Mamuña, who hosted me during my stay. And I would highly recommend travelers to stay there. Also, the Oberoi, Marrakesh, the La Santana, tucked away in the Cabas district, and also the Cabas Tamadote, which is owned by Sir Richard Branson. I had pleasure of dining at his place and meeting him and, you know, having a photo moment with him during my visit there. And if there's anyone, our audience out there listening, that is interested in traveling to Marrakesh, please reach out to me. Again, it's Linda Scroggins. My website is www.affluentluxurytravel.net. And you can reach me at linda@affluentluxurytravel.net.
All righty. Thank you so much, Linda Scroggins. Always enjoy our chat. Always go to guests. I'm Kevin Price. And we'll have a link, of course, to her website as well at priceofbusiness.com. And stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. We have to say it's a show that never ends. The reason why is because it continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com, where we are always adding new audio, video, articles, and more. Make sure you check it out while they're set up for our newsletter, Read Instead. Someone you'll see throughout the Price of Business digital network is my guest this segment, Brian Gordon. And Brian is a long-term care insurance specialist extraordinaire. And in fact, as someone myself who sold insurance in the health and life area for many years, Brian, you have forgotten more about long-term care than I've ever known. I'm always impressed by every conversation we have. And in the insurance space, it seems like in many categories, you know, there's not a whole lot of action, but this is a very dynamic space in the insurance universe, I think. Long-term care is a lot happening all the time, which is why you need expertise involved. Before we get into our topic today, more information about your company and the best website for more information, and welcome.
Absolutely. Thanks, Kevin. Always good to be here. Our company is called Gordon Associates Long-Term Care Planning. And we are a long-term care insurance agency that's been in business now for 50 years. My dad started it back in 1975, and I worked in the business for 35 years, and my brother-in-law, Peter Florek, has been doing it for almost 30 years with us. And we try to come up with the best solutions for people when they're looking at long-term care planning, and because there's many different ways to kind of skin this cat, as we've talked over the years, and we just want to make sure that families know how parents and grandparents and siblings want to be taken care of if we do live this long life that we all talk about. And our best website is bestltcplan.com, and our toll-free number is 800-533-6242.
Yeah, check that out. All right, so we're going to talk about Secure and how it's being leveraged to pay for long-term care insurance. This is a very interesting, very timely story. Why don't you set the stage for us?
Sure. So, you know, this is something that we've been wrestling with for quite a few years now, and it used to be that we would have a stretch IRA when our loved ones die based on our own mortality and how long we're going to live. And that was changed years ago to have to spend that IRA, that qualified money, down with it within 10 years now. And it was, it was rather difficult for some families, and people can take it all in 1 year, but 10 years from that death, that IRA needs to be spent down, and then obviously pay taxes on over the years. And, we talked to a lot of families and a lot of people over the years, and they got this big chunk of money. And what we did with a lot of our financial advisors is look to ways to, spread that out over at least a 10-year period of time to allow them not to get nailed with this big tax hit, right out of the gate for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a great tool for planning.
Yes, it's something that we've, on our side of the world, because of the Secure 2.0 that we all know about as well, because it's got to be spent down in 10 years, that's where we've come into play for many years. I've got a couple that's getting close to being done paying their premiums, because years ago, right when the Secure Act hit, one of their last parents had passed away on one side, and the advisor we were talking about what to do and, you know, buying life insurance or, you know, repurposing somewhere else. And they thought that buying a long-term care, a hybrid life and long-term care plan, was really the best thing to do with that money because they really weren't expecting it or really needed it at that time.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people say, why wouldn't someone use a Roth? That would avoid all this, right? Well, the reason why is that you got some people who just have an aversion to paying taxes anyway.
Right.
They'd rather come from money that they don't have to use because they have to use their money while they're earning income and use that as a way of leveraging a lower tax burden in here and now. A lot of people find that to be a viable strategy. There's a reason why both traditional and Roth still exist. That's the idea behind there. Although it would solve that problem if they had Roth instead, obviously.
Right. And you're not going to want to use the Roth to pay your long-term care premiums because it's already been tax money. So we wouldn't use a Roth IRA more than obviously the traditional ones.
Right. So when you say use it to pay your long-term care, are you talking about the person who is accumulating the Roth or those who inherit who are accumulating the traditional IRA or those who are the beneficiaries of it? Talk a little bit about that.
We actually are doing it on both sides of the fence on that as well. So a lot of people that we're working with when they need to spend down their loved one's IRA, they're doing it where they're buying like a 10-pay, you know, life and long-term care policy, and then that premium goes ahead and just pays that for the next 10 years. And then policyholder just goes ahead and pays the tax on whatever that premium was. It could be $15,000 or $20,000 or $8,000 a year, and they just pay their normal taxes on that. And what one of the couples I worked with said is that it kind of reminds me of what we did with some inheritance we got from my grandparents. It was like $10,000. It was nothing crazy, but we repurposed that into education for our child when she was like 6 months old, and now we're almost done college, and it funded the tuition for the same thing with using the IRA. We're taking a family member's money that kind of is a gift that keeps on giving, and families love that they can kind of repurpose that, and it's kind of a nice story. And so we see a lot of people that don't want it and don't need the income, but they also know that they potentially can live that long life, and they want to have something that can provide income tax free to them if they needed care down the road. And that's kind of what they're doing, is repurposing the inherited IRAs.
So what were people's options before Secure 2.0?
So we still had products out there. We have carriers where we have gone ahead and taken a lump sum out of someone's IRA, moved it into a single premium immediate annuity, and then we've used that annuity with someone as long as they're 59 and a half or above, and we've used that annuity to go ahead and fund their long-term care policy for them. And part of the reason is some people we work with have, you know, they're like, we're putting away too much money in retirement, which we love hearing that. But some people don't like the idea of having that huge taxable event in the future. And so they're trying to skinny it down a little bit, you know, before they have to do their RMDs and things like that. So it's just a forced way to do something like this. And it's a way to repurpose something that gives them some tax-free income. And that's something that we're doing with a lot of folks as well. We also have folks that just come to us every year and they're like, you know, they want to just use their IRA dollars to pay it, and they can go and take the money right out of their IRA and they can deal with paying the taxes and just pay their premiums. So there's a lot of different ways that people are doing it today as well.
Yeah, why don't you elaborate on that? What are some of your options when it comes to Secure 2.0?
Sure. So, I mean, we have one carrier that we can do a joint policy for a couple. And we've gone ahead and we've moved, let's say we moved, you know, $200,000 into this account from that IRA. I'm just using a round number. And then over the next, you know, 10 years, it pays the premium of, let's say, $24,000 a year of a long-term care policy. So what happens is that couple would be taxed every year, you know, on the gains on the $24,000. And then after 10 years, that policy would be fully paid up for them. And if they were to need care in the future, any benefits they receive from that policy would be provided to them tax-free on that. So it just gives them some nice income in the future for themselves if they needed care.
Makes a lot of sense. As we wrap it up, some final thoughts and some takeaways. This is a great topic, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just thinking of living as long as we're going to live today. And, you know, Kevin, we've talked for many, many years already over the years on this subject, and it's not becoming an easier problem to deal with. And what we're trying to tell people today is the sooner we can address this problem and the sooner we get this problem off the table for families, then they can go ahead and think of other things down the road. But this is a real problem for families as we're getting, you know, 3 to 4 phone calls in any given week with people going on to claim. And this just helps, you know, give your family some direction if something were to happen to them.
Very good. Give your website one more time.
BestLTCPlan.com is the best website to reach us, BestLTCPlan.com.
Always love my chats with you, sir. Very good segment. Very, very important and valuable. I think this is why, again, talk to an expert and ask your general agent who's selling you everything from life insurance to health insurance and all other kinds of things. Can we get an expert who does nothing but long-term care involved? Because I think it's absolutely crucial. There's stuff that Brian learned, you know, that typical agents don't learn, and you've got a currency on what's happening that very few general agents have. So thanks for bringing your insight, Brian.
Thanks, Kevin. Always happy to be on the show.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I'm Kevin Price. That's Brian Gordon. You're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. We call it the show that never ends because of the fact it continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com, where we're always adding new content, audio, video, articles, and more. Make sure you check that out. One of the people you'll find there is my guest this segment, Lee Kaplan. In fact, I think we have more articles on our website, our newsletter, Read Instead, by Lee than virtually any recurring guest on the show. He brings great commentary and thought on everything from the most local level of government, as we live in Houston, and all the way up to global issues as well. This segment, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the state of Texas. And it's in a very important place because it's certainly one of Donald Trump's favorite places, you know, I would say to a fault. Lee, glad to have you back on. As always, a little bit about your practice, and take a minute for that, and the one best website for people to get more information, and welcome, as always.
Well, thank you. I'm a senior partner at the firm of Murphy Ball Stratton, and our website is mbssmartlaw.com, so there are two S's in the middle. All of our lawyers and our practice is litigation, trials and arbitrations, settlements when they happen, if they happen, mediations, things like that. But all of our lawyers have experience having worked for judges, including we have a U.S. Supreme Court clerk, and we frankly take cases that we're interested in on both sides of the docket, and we prepare them for trial or arbitration. If they settle along the way, it's because people know we are getting ready for our trial. And we have a talented group with a lot of moxie, and we don't have a big superstructure, so we're more efficient in terms of how we charge people. But it's mbssmartlaw.com.
Yeah, very good. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Texas. As I said, it's a hot state for really kind of a trendsetter, sometimes in the worst way, what's going on politically. It's very interesting to Donald Trump. They say Florida is his home away from home, but I think Texas might be. Let's talk a little bit about Ken Paxton, someone who, amazing to me, not in a good way, that he's still the attorney general, the chief law enforcement officer, and one of the, you know, really from the documented level, and again, accused. I'm not going to go to the court against them, but certainly one of the most ethically challenged elected officials in the state, and yet our chief law enforcement officer. Unbelievable. And now he's running for U.S. Senate and against John Cornyn. And people are wondering, is this his year? I think he's been unusually silent, to be honest with you. But there's been a very effective ad campaign that is by third parties that go after him. I mean, they're excellent ads. I'm sure you've seen them as well. But, you know, there's a lot of time left, Lee.
Well, that's right. And it's really providential that Angela Paxton sued for a divorce, quote unquote, on biblical grounds. There's some rich irony there. But it may be that this is so far in advance of the election that his prime supporters, who are billionaires, will give him enough money that he can swamp Cornyn in the primary. Because I have little doubt that if Paxton wins the primary, he will be elected senator. I think it would be almost impossible for Tallarico or whoever the Democrats nominate to win the election, notwithstanding the fact that he's an extremely religious person by all accounts.
Yeah.
Maybe people will be weary of some of this controversy, but I have a feeling that Paxton, if he wins, will have so much money that he'll swamp any Democrat. You know, what you have is you have a choice between the lackluster in Cornyn and the, to put it kindly, ethically challenged in Paxton. Of course, now he's morally challenged.
Yeah, yeah. It has a lot of deja vu, doesn't it, of David Dewhurst versus Ted Cruz. And a lot of people thought that David Dewhurst was going to be a shoe-in for a seat that Ted Cruz eventually won. And, boy, that did not unfold that way at all. And when you look at the personalities, and by the way, I'm not saying that Ted Cruz has the ethical standards of Paxton. I'm not saying that. He's kind of in a league of his own. Paxton seems to be what I've observed. Again, opinion. It has a similar feel. A lot of people were shocked with what ended up happening on that election. It almost feels like more likely to happen this time around. I don't know.
Yeah.
What does your gut
tell
you?
People forget that Dewhurst also had a divorce in his recent history, and he wasn't very personally appealing. And Cruz kind of rode that to what was thought of as an upset victory at the time. I think that Paxton has a shot at recovering because the election or the primary is not until, I guess, March. So he's still got 6 months to just flood the airwaves with money.
Yeah.
And he's got people in his corner.
You mentioned billionaires wanting to do just that. Elaborate why. We both know the heavy push that I don't understand quite why billionaires are hot on this, but on homeschooling, for example, that for whatever reason, that has a lot of weight. But what are some other, and billionaires, for whatever reason, getting behind that? Maybe they don't want property tax for their kids going to school. I don't know. I'm trying to figure that whole deal out. Talk about why billionaires like, and I've seen it too, why they like Paxton.
Well, Paxton has sued the federal government so many times on, quote unquote, on their behalf to overturn every initiative that the Democrats came up with. And they probably thought of Cornyn as being sort of a foot soldier, whereas Paxton was more of a field general who was suing the feds all the time. And there are these Christian nationalists who think the public schools are hotbeds of socialism. And Cornyn, of course, never had much to say about that. But Paxton was a kind of a culture warrior. And therefore, many of them are engaged in what I call confirmation bias. Once you go with somebody, it's hard to break away from them. And it's some of the very religious people who are breaking away from Paxton. And whether there are enough of them to care, I don't know. Because so many people think their taxes are too high, the public schools are culturally unfriendly to them, and they just as soon find a way to have their kids homeschooled. So I think Texas is really in the forefront of that stuff. Now, what Abbott does may matter. I think Governor Abbott will stay neutral in that race, which probably will hurt Paxton. I also think that Paxton is unlikely to find a lot of friendly adherence among Republican office holders. So they may come out in favor of Cornyn, which would help Cornyn and hurt Paxton exponentially.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Very good. I think you're probably right. I think it's, we're going to see a lot. What do you think the ad flush is going to happen, the big ad push? I'm thinking maybe even before January.
Well, I don't know exactly how those guys commit their money. Cornyn's been on the airwaves quite a bit with some pretty saccharine ads about how Cornyn has voted with Trump 99% of the time. He's helped the farmers. He's gotten rid of these immigrants so that he's perceived as not being a sanctuary cities guy. It's hard to say exactly when that will start. It'll depend in large part upon Cornyn's budget. He's gotten in his licks early, which may have surprised the Paxtonites, but Paxton will have so much money that it might matter. I don't know. If I were to predict now, I would predict that Cornyn will win the primary.
Yeah, yeah. And in a lot of the choices, that is certainly the best of the two, in my opinion. And hopefully, I mean, there's a chance, right? Because Trump's done in 28. Hopefully, Cornyn can grow a little backbone and be more independent if he's got 6 years and Trump's only around for two more. I mean, that's a hope.
Well, we'll see. I'm dubious. First of all, Trump's going to keep it up in the air as to whether he's going to run for a third term.
Yeah.
And he enjoys the attention. He can't do without the attention.
He can't.
So who really knows?
And I agree with your assessment of Cornyn's ads. But I got to tell you, the independents, the PACs that are running ads against Paxton, those have been extremely powerful. I'm like, how in the world could anyone support this guy? It's very targeted towards one of his key constituents, which are conservative Christians, divorcing him, as you pointed out, on biblical grounds.
I thought that was an amusing choice of words that Angela Paxton chose, and I think it was calculated to hurt his chances of becoming senator.
Yeah, to stay a senator, right? She's in the Senate.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll see how this turns out. As of right now, I would predict that Cornyn is a narrow winner over Paxton, maybe 52%.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're probably right, although it should be much bigger than that, but I think you're right. All right, Lee Kaplan, always enjoy my chats with you. Give your website one more time as I wrap it up.
It's Murphy Ball Stratton, which is mbssmartlaw.com.
Two S's. That's right. Remember that. I'm Kevin Price. This is the nationally syndicated Price of Business. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. Do you want to remind you, the Price of Business show is a show that never ends. And what we mean by that is it continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com, where we're always adding new audio, video, articles, and more. One of the people you'll find there is my guest in this segment, and we're delighted always to have him on, and it's Gene Townley. He is globally recognized as a leader in business brokering, among the top five globally and similar in the United States. Gene, always love having you on. Always get questions when you're on. And we've got a very interesting topic today. A little bit more information about your business and one best website for people to get more information.
Thank you, Kevin. I always love being on the Price of Business. So We're TNT Business Brokers, and we focus on working with sellers to exit their business at the right time. Yes, we have tons of buyers, and we bring the buyers and put the deal together, but it's really about the seller and making sure they're getting what they need to exit and move to the next phase of life. There's tons of education on business sales and acquisitions at dynamitebrokers.com.
Dynamitebrokers.com. Check that out. Recently, I had you on the program, and you were talking about how robust the seller versus buyer environment is right now. It's a fascinating conversation that I encourage the listener to check out. But you mentioned something that we began to walk down, and I thought we need to go into more depth on that, which is the boom of people in the tech industry who are bailing out of it very quickly and looking at buying their own business. They're looking at an environment, and I know this, as I mentioned before, I've got two sons who are programmers, one for who had been a programmer for Google, he now works independently, and another who now works independently, who had been a programmer for Google at one point and Facebook at one point. These guys are brainiacs, and they will vouch for what you've seen and what you've said, and they've seen it themselves, and I found this very interesting. My question was, and I want to explore this, and again, this is one business broker who's been approached by tech people who are escaping the industry, because mainly because of AI, if you're wondering why. I would like you to elaborate on, are there certain types of businesses that they gravitate towards?
Yes. They are... First of all, there are a lot of these people leaving IT, you know, because of their fear of AI as it develops. And most of them are looking for a smaller business, something, five employees plus the owner or less. And it's interesting, I've asked a few of them, well, why don't you go big and get a 50-employee business? And they say, really simple is, we feel like we can control, and it's easier to control a company this size, especially with the coming of AI. Mm. And most of them are looking in the service industry, which I find really interesting, and I've asked several of them, okay, why? You've never done any type of construction or any type of electrical or whatever. Why would you consider going into buying a small electrical business? And they said, because I don't think that AI can replace a human being going out and swapping out a plug or swapping out a 200-ounce service. So they have a big, big fear of what's coming with AI, which, mm-hmm. you know, anybody with any sense, you hear that and your ears go up, perk up, and you go, oh no, what should I be paying attention to?
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Go ahead.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I am. I'm just watching it and knowing the trend and saying, so it makes me ask a few others, and there's some in corporate America that are doing the same. They feel like their job, while it may not be now, in the next few years, some of these, you know, middle-level executives feel like their jobs are going to be replaced with mm-hmm. technology. So it's just very, very interesting, and it looks like small private business is very possibly going to be what saves all of these displaced workers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is very interesting. By the way, one of my sons in particular would say the reason why he would only have, if he were to go this route, which I think he's going to have, a side business that is a service business. So it's lining up with what you and I have been talking about while still continuing to work in the tech field because he loves tech. And but he said, here's the deal. I can get AI to do what 50 employees can do. I don't need 50 employees. So AI will fill that bill. He goes, I can already get AI to replace employees. And so you're not going to see a lot who are interested in more than 10. And probably the majority of those will be hands-on people. They won't be doing much of anything else. That's how efficient AI already is, let alone is becoming.
Yes, it's kind of amazing to just sit and think about how technology is changing the world as we know it so quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be a situation, those that pay attention and, you know, get their head out of the sand are going to be very, very, very thankful that they did.
No question about it. And so what's interesting about this, if I understand you correctly, Gene Townley, is that they're not necessarily particularly interested in a certain type of service business per se, just one that is resistant to the problems that come with AI. They're open to all kinds of things. They may have never replaced a light bulb before, but they want to have an electric company because that's something that's resistant to AI.
That is correct. That is correct. We've seen a few of them go into smaller, like mom-and-pop restaurants, and their thought there is, you know, people are going to have to eat. But yes, I think it kind of lends to the way a lot of things are moving. And, you know, it's almost like the perfect storm, because COVID woke a lot of people up and made them realize we can work remote. You know, I don't have to be sitting in front of clients, you know, and sometimes our sellers, for instance, will be mid, late 70s, you know, great, great people. But I always get the question of, well, how are you going to, I'm in Texas, how are you going to sell my business from Alabama?
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting to me that those people were not as affected by COVID and kind of have the, I don't want to say old school, but the older mentality that you've got to be sitting in front of somebody to do business. But yet, we were counting the other day of all the closings we've had this year. Face-to-face, we have buyer or seller. So we could have met both. We could have met nobody. But of all the closings, less than 10% we meet in person, either the buyer or the seller. And I think that says a lot about how this world is moving and going.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Gene, this is fascinating. Other than, you know, when you think about, and we have to wrap it up real quick. In fact, I shouldn't ask this question, but you got me in your loop. I'm always intrigued whenever you're on. Other than electric companies, you know, and you mentioned restaurants, kind of give us a few names of industries that they're asking for or about by name. You know, dry cleaning, which I don't know, I don't see that surviving per se, but that's something that popped in my head. Talk about that. Some of the industries they mentioned by name.
Yeah. Obviously, dry cleaning, unfortunately, is not one of them.
Yeah.
The dry cleaners seem to be having a very, very rough time. But any service industries, you know, some of them are wanting to go into construction, like, you know, let's go build pole barns and houses. Again, I think it'll be a while before technology can replace the guy with a hammer and the nail. There are restaurants. Some of them are even trying to figure out a way, and in some states you can own different medical facilities without being a physician. And again, they're saying, you know, as we age, people are always going to need medical. There's a couple of different manufacturing facilities, like a metal truss company. There's been lots of them that have loved that concept. And I think part of it is the IT-backed engineering is not that – it's different, but it's not that different from a type of a – like a mechanical or structural, you know, steel-type engineering. And I think it still piques their interest, to say the least. So
Interesting. Well, I got a feeling you and I will be talking about this more in the future, because this is definitely a trend. And again, heard it from two guys that are on the front line, two of my sons who are, again, experienced as programmers, very high-level programmers for two of the biggest companies out there. So what you're saying lines up significantly with what they're saying. Gene Townley, love having you on. Great segment as always. I always learn a little more every time you're on, and I need it. Just ask my wife. She'll tell you that. Gene, thanks so much as always.
Thank you for having me.
Give that website one more time.
DynamiteBrokers.com.
DynamiteBrokers.com. Make sure you check that out. We'll have the link, of course, at priceofbusiness.com, and stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm really delighted to have Neelana, right?
Neelana, yes, you got it.
Yep. Oh, Kevin, go embarrass yourself alone. And Kara Vasas, glad to have you on the program. I love your name, but, man, I look at it sometimes and it's like, is that what she's saying? Neelana Kara Vasas. There we go. I think I got it. All right.
You did
and so,
perfect.
Yeah, so perfect. I love that. We're going to jump into our topic today, but before I do that, I want to mention this is a nationally syndicated Price of Business show, 25 years old next year. You wouldn't know by looking at me. And we're always glad to have on the program our guest today, phenomenal at what she does. And I think we have the most unique program series going on that I don't think I've seen anywhere else when it comes to looking at crime. You have created a very unique, very niche way that's highly neglected and over-needed, or greatly needed, rather, not over-needed. Yeah, well, maybe over-needed. Real quickly, tell us a little bit about your firm and the best website for more information, and welcome back, as always.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on your respected show, Kevin. My practice is it's a holistic approach to federal criminal defense and white-collar crime in particular. I'm located in Philadelphia, and I've been in practice in federal courts for close to 30 years now. And I always cherish the opportunity to try and make a difference in people's lives.
No question about it. Talk about our topic today. We're going to jump right into it on shame and, you know, debilitating or motivational for the white-collar criminal defendant. Now we're taking words that I've been speaking for decades and all of a sudden having trouble with them. So anyway, we're going to keep working on it here. This is an important topic because I know as an institution, shame is the go-to modus operandi for prisons.
It is, and I think that it's actually both debilitating and can be motivational depending upon the circumstances. So, you know, I think I see what happens is, you know, people fall into the traps of their vulnerabilities and develop shame as a result from the way they see themselves and the way that they perceive others to see them, whether that's correct or incorrect. That's kind of what they're interpreting and putting on themselves. And I can give an example of a young man that I represented who I think is a good case study for this topic, if you'd like.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So this young man I represented many years ago, and He, like many people, struggled with a terrible addiction problem that he developed from a sports injury that got him hooked on prescription drugs, and you know, it went from there. And his family comes from such a great family, and they struggled for many, many years to help him. He was in and out of rehabs. He just couldn't get it together. And then he ended up committing a fraud, basically, in order to get more drugs and get finances to get more drugs. I mean, it was just focused on that addiction. And we went to court, went on for a long time, and finally we were able to get him out of this situation without serving any prison time, thank God. You know, and then we were, he and I and his parents were sitting outside the courtroom in the hallway afterwards, and you know, you would think you were attending a funeral as opposed to being joyous, because it was just like I could read it in their faces, in the parents. They were just done. They had nothing left in the tank, and they were so fearful of what's going to happen next. You know, he's not going to prison, thank God, but what's going to happen next? Because this is just an endless cycle that's going to destroy him one way or the other. You know, in that moment, I just acted on instinct. And sometimes, you know, you open your mouth and you just say that elephant in the room that nobody wants to address. So I thought, you know what, we're at that point and I just have to do something really bold. So I looked at him and I said, you know, what do you plan to do with yourself at this point? You know, do you plan to make something of your life, or do you plan to continue to be a drain on society and a drain on your parents? Well, let me tell you, he looked at me, and if looks could kill, I would have been dead in that hallway. I mean, he was like fuming furious with me, and he did not say one blessed word. He turned around, he stomped off and left, and then walked all the way home, which was a very long way. And, you know, I looked at his parents and I said, should I not have said that? And they said, no, you know, you did the right thing. I mean, that's really what it is. So we left, and then a month went by. I didn't hear anything. And then the call came, and it was him. And he said, you shamed me. And I said, I did. He said, you did. You shamed me. I was so angry with you. I said, I know. I said, but that's good that I was able to shame you, because that shows me that there's something there. You know, if I wasn't able to shame you, then you'd be a lost cause. And he said, well, you shamed me. And he said, I'm going to make something of myself. He said, I started my own business. I said, you did? He said, I did. And he was very good technologically. And he started his own business. And he said, this is what I'm going to do. And now I just have to find some clients. I said, well, good for you. And now you're going to have your first client. That's going to be me. I said, and, you know, the balance of your fee that your mom is ready to pay off, I don't want her to pay it off. I think you should pay it off and take some responsibility for your situation. So I'm going to give you the opportunity to work it off. So I'll be your client. You'll work it off, and then you'll do a good job for me, and I'll give you a reference, and then you'll get more clients. And off it went. And the addiction was done. He started the business. The business has gone phenomenally well. He's doing really well. He's married. He has a beautiful family. It turned it around for him, because it just brought it. Like, he was living in darkness with this shame that was just destroying him, and he just couldn't get out of it and couldn't move forward and was just choking on it. And by me just saying that in that, you know, very abrupt way, it hit home, apparently, thank God, because, you know, in that moment I thought, either I've done something really good or something really bad, we'll find out.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Very, very good example. And, you know, and it is a risk, right? You're rolling the dice.
Right.
What, you know, and frankly, you know, there's a, in the mental health world, my wife's a therapist and I'm her favorite patient, even though I'm involuntary. But in the mental health world, we talk a lot about, you know, what goes on is shame versus guilt. Shame versus guilt. And
we will talk about that in another segment. But you're right; there is a difference. And if I thought that he could that he was the type of person that would benefit from therapy, I would have suggested that. I mean, that I think is very important. And your wife is right. But the thing is, he wasn't that kind of guy. He wasn't the kind of guy that was going to go to therapy. I just knew that.
No, I get it. Let me finish my thought though, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
So shame, so what I really recognize is this guy had more guilt than shame, right? Because if he had really total shame, he probably would have continued on his life of crime no matter what you had said. There was a real nugget of hope for this person, a real nugget of hope that you ended up tapping into by saying that may have not have come out any other way.
I think that's true. I think that's true. But also, you know, there are in different cultures, like in the U.S., we're more of a guilt society than a shame society. We focus more on, you know, morally doing the right thing as opposed to not shaming yourself or your family. But there's other societies where the balance is tipped a little more towards shame. And, you know, this young man and his family, you know, their background ethnically was from one of the Balkan states. And there, it's more tipped towards shame. So when I said about, you know, continuing to be a drain on your parents and society and everything, I think that hit home in that sense with him in a way that it may not have with someone else who was from, say, Australia, where that culture is more guilt-based as opposed to shame-based.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. But this is going beyond the call of duty for you as an attorney. I love this story, and it shows that when it comes to your objectives, because he could have been a client into continuously for you.
Well, and listen, I tell people, I tell people, look, I don't want you as a perpetual client. I'd like you to come back as my friend, but not as a lifelong, you know, client. And you know, there's an expression. They say, if you save a life, then you're responsible for it, you know. And in a sense, like I've said before, in my practice, I feel, okay, you know, we did great in court and he didn't go to prison, but if we don't solve his fundamental problem, his underlying problem, then, you know, he's just going to be back here and he's going to end up either in prison or dead, because that's the result of addiction if it doesn't stop, if the cycle doesn't break.
Yeah. And on that, we're going to have to wrap it up with a real quick final thought on your part and your website one more time.
My website is just my first name, nialena.com. So it's nialena.com. And my final thought is just for people out there who may be listening and struggling with similar situations, you know, it is never hopeless. It is never, ever hopeless. No matter how dark it may seem, it's never hopeless. And just find someone to tell it to bring it out into the light.
Yep.
And to get some help with it, regardless of what it is.
Definitely check out her website. Thanks, as always, very important topic. And again, this just shows a holistic approach you like to bring. I think it's crucial. I am Kevin Price. This is the nationally syndicated Price of Business. Stay tuned for more after this.
That wraps up another Price of Business. I am glad to be with you. Really enjoyed it and enjoying our new home here on these stations around the country. I do want to remind you that the show continues 24/7. Not only do we have this weekly show that you can hear on this station, but we're on other stations around the country with a daily program as well. You can easily learn about them by visiting us at priceofbusiness.com. We affectionately say, It is the show that never ends. And what we mean by that is that it continues 24/7 with the addition of new audio, video, articles, and more at priceofbusiness.com. While there, we'd like you to engage with us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Kevin Price Live and all of our sister sites as well. All right, I'm going to take a break until next time. Next week, we'll be back with you with much more information for you, and look forward to that conversation. And I want to say again, thank you to USA Business Radio to make it possible for this to have been commercial free, an entire hour of commercial free. And guess what? Even more commercial free than public radio. So we're excited about that. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on this station.